Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Lowe's has the Labor Day deals you need to give your home a new look. Buy one, get one free. Select interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Then, add the final touch with 2 for $8 on select 2.5 or 3-quart mums. Refresh your home and save big while doing it. Lowe's. We help. You save. Valid through 9-3. Mums offer in-store only. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for details.
Anything to lose. I have no secrets to hide. I could just be blunt and people could judge it however they judge it.
From NBI Studios, this is Truth and Justice, a crowdsourced investigation in real time. I'm Bob Ruff.
Ahoy, friends. You are listening to the Truth and Justice follow-up episode for season 15, episode 20, White's closing argument. Bob gets into the closing argument that Jody's defense attorney decides to attack the state's case with and does not finish off strong. We have a lot of questions and a lot of discussion, so let's get into it. We are sans Zach today. He's on assignment with family. We miss him, and we'll let him know what happens, you guys. Don't worry. We'll get him caught up.
Real quick before we get into our discussion about the episode, we're trying to, you know, shake off the cobwebs. We had a week's vacation, so we're trying to catch up to where we were at 2 weeks ago. But one housekeeping thing I want to do is people were asking a few weeks ago if they were able to send Jody money for their like commissary and stuff in the prison. They are. Listener Jennifer Hill has been in contact with Jody and figured out how to do that and a way to do it. So I wanted to share that with you guys because Jody got moved facilities. And they've been dealing with some issues there, but one thing is they've kind of lost a lot of their normal supplies they have, including some grooming and like shaving equipment and stuff like that. Which, as you guys know, Jody is trans. Jody lives their life as a woman in prison, and they're not able to shave. They're really going through a rough time right now. So I want to throw this out there. I know Jennifer and a few other listeners have already like sent some money to put into Jody's commissary so that they can go to the kiosk and order the things that they need. Plus the holidays are coming up and they can get, you know, snacks and things like that. So if you are wanting to send any money to Jody, a couple bucks, you know, there's so many of us. If everybody sends a couple bucks, it will really make a huge difference.
Oh, for sure.
For Jody. But all you got to do is go to connectnetwork.com.tto. And that's where you want to send the money. I haven't gone through that process yet, so I don't know exactly how that's set up to do it. But if you do have questions about that, and if you're on Facebook, on our Facebook fan page, if you reach out to Jennifer Hill, maybe Jennifer can even make a post about it and for people to follow a link and explain how all that's done. I know there's a group of listeners that all communicate regularly with Jody that they're all setting up where they're all, I think they're all like cash apping and Venmoing money to Jennifer so Jennifer can send the money because she's already got an account set up. So she may be willing to do that for you too. I just wanted to share that because I thought it was really sweet that they were doing it. Mm-hmm. And I know Jody has told me in emails that it's making a huge difference for them. They were pretty upset about, you know, the situation they were dealing with when they got
into
the new facility. It sounds like the new facility is supposed to be better, but they're just dealing with some other some issues that we're working on right now.
Yeah.
While they're there. So, but that's one way that you can help make things a little better for Jody if you wanted to do that. And with that being said, and I just realized that again, I was going to ask you if you read the full closing argument yet until I just realized I didn't publish it.
I was going to say, I don't think you published it yet.
Yeah, and I apologize for that. It will be out by Friday. It'll be out tonight, actually, but on Tuesday when we're done recording this, I just haven't drug it over to the, because of the vacation, and we'd like finished recording the episode, and then I vowed that I was going to stay inside with my family for a whole week and not be in the office. I literally did not come out to my office for 5 days straight. which I never do. But part of that 5 days would have been publishing the document. We'll get that done. But as far as what you heard, what did you think about the closing arguments, Janet?
Well, you know, to be honest with you, at first I was actually, I mean, it sounds crazy to say this, but I just didn't know what to expect. I was expecting even less. Now, that doesn't mean that it was enough or that it didn't hurt more than helped. But there were a few points in there that, you know, just in terms of us having spoken numerous times about how kind of ineffective White was, I was almost surprised to, I was a little surprised to hear some of the things put together. And then in my mind, I thought to myself, like, oh my God, is this just like Jody, like trying to, like, why don't you take a look at these bullet points that I've just written down here? Because you seem not to know what's going on. And then he just like expounded on those and then ended up doing more harm than good. I don't know. But, you know, there was sort of like, I was like, oh, he's kind of fighting for his client. But at the end of the day, I agree with you that the second you start leaning into the idea that you're going to say like, sure, they did the robbery, but that doesn't mean they did the, like, wow, really? That's the route you're going to take? And I saw someone post on, it's not in the follow-up questions, but I did see someone's post on Facebook when I went in to check on the follow-up questions that said, you know, was White like a shill for the state? And I didn't necessarily get that feeling. I just got the feeling of like ineptitude, like, oh, you don't see what's like, you don't understand how to approach this at all. But I didn't feel necessarily that they were trying to throw it, if that makes sense. Like, I think they thought they were doing their best, you know?
Yeah, and I saw questions and comments like that from people that thought that that White was playing for the prosecution. I didn't get that impression. It just seemed like complete ineptitude to me. Like, just did a really bad job. And some of that strategy stuff, and like I said, I always say this, I sit here and talk like a lawyer all the time, even though I'm not a lawyer. So I'm sure there's lawyers like, shut the fuck up. You know what you're talking about, Bob. But just for me, like being, I try to look at myself as like a potential juror, like, are you convincing me? I already believe Jody's innocent. And when I was reading through the closing argument, I'm like, you didn't help at all. Yeah. Like, you made it, it's kind of like putting your eggs in one basket. Like, when they throw this whole thing, like, it had to be Carvale that did the robbery. It was like, it almost, like, it made it so that if the jury didn't buy that, if the jury buys into the fact that Jody did do the robbery,
right,
then he left it wide open for, well, then Jody did the murder.
Exactly.
Where, like, I would have attacked it so differently, where I would have really leaned in. And he also didn't front run anything. And that was crazy to me. And maybe that's just my debate style. But, like, you try to anticipate what the other person's going to say.
Right.
Especially when they're going to get the last word, like it was in this case.
Right.
So you got to know what Cotter's going to come up and say after that. And he just like made no effort to front run anything. Like, you know, Mr. Cotter's going to come up here and he's going to tell you that it's all about the robbery.
Right.
And but don't buy it because, you know what I mean? Like, there was none of that.
Yeah.
It was just so laid back. And then the final closing was like, what? Like, we believe he's not guilty at the end of it. Like, it was such stark contrast.
Yeah.
To what Cotter did.
For sure.
Which was just authoritative and just dominating and just Jody is guilty. That person that's sitting there is the guilty one. We know, like, it was just everything was, there was no question left in anything. So if I'm a juror and I'm taking all that in, I'm like, well, that side is 100% certain that they got the right guy.
Right.
And then this side is like, yeah, I mean, I don't think you did it. I don't know. Yeah. You know, it just was so, it was so, which is why I'm doing my own closing argument.
I know. I was going to say, if only we could find out what you would have said.
It's going to be long. It's going to be long. I've been writing it and I'm already, as of today, I was at like 8,000 words already my closing. I don't know what that is for a normal closing, but it'll probably be 45 minutes, an hour of me yammering.
Okay.
And part of it is I try to lay out at the beginning, I had to like set some weird ground rules for myself, right? So I didn't want to do the closing with, we should get into these questions, but I guess we can talk about this. It's fine. And I think somebody might have even asked about this in the questions. Is there a question about the rules I made for myself? The ground rules? Maybe not. Might have been another post.
I think it's another post.
Okay. So the tricky part was I didn't want to do a closing argument based on new information we've learned now. for example, like we have Sonia Lucas's recantation. We have the time card, stuff they didn't have at trial.
Well, that makes sense. That rule makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. So there's that rule I kind of made for myself, like stuff that was discovered years later. It wasn't available to White at trial. I'm not using. But the other side of it was, I'm super frustrated with his lack of cross-examination of people. And so I allowed myself to say, okay, I'm going to, for example, you know, McKinney's testifying. Like, I'm approaching it as though I was a decent defense attorney and that I confronted him with his previous report. Or when Victoria Miles was testifying, I'm approaching it as though if I was the defense attorney, that during cross, I didn't say, are you sure there was no plastic on the windows? And she said, nope.
Right.
Whereas I would have said, well, here's your initial statement. And yeah. Here you said there was plastic on. So I'm approaching it. So I'm adding more into it that wasn't in the trial. But everything that I'm working off of was all the stuff that was in discovery that White had access to that I feel he should have brought out in cross-examination. So I'm doing more than just the evidence was brought out in trial and kind of assuming some of that, but then kind of drawing the line of, but new stuff that we found afterwards, I'm not saying anything about the time card. I'm not saying anything about Sonia Lucas recanting her testimony because I wanted to see if I could put together a valid argument that would convince an open-minded person that they should acquit based on the available information at the time. So I'm looking forward to everybody hearing it. I'm looking forward to all of our lawyers critiquing my fireman attempt at being a lawyer.
Well, I'm not too worried about it because I do feel like there are many episodes of this podcast in which you are essentially defending, you are making a type of closing statement every time you're attacking something that was part of the investigation or part of the trial itself. So I'm not too worried about it. But yeah, I mean,
do a little bit of theatrics though.
Oh no, please tell me.
Well, no, not too much theatrics, but I keep trying to put myself in the position like I'm a lawyer standing in the courtroom in front of the jury.
Yeah.
So I'm speaking as though I'm coming from that place. So I'm saying things like, Mr. Cotter over here told you this.
Great, great.
And I'm saying, look at this jacket. Look at it. Is this gray and black? You know, like stuff like that. As the yeah. So
I tried to do something with the jacket. White tried to do something with the jacket.
Yeah. I don't know. It's a weird thing. I've never done anything like this before. It's been kind of fun to do it. And it's been, you know, a good recap of the case. But
what if you just went completely over the top and you were like you, madam, sitting there in the second row, batting your eyelashes and fanning your face. I know it's a little hot in here. Your Honor, I do declare, if we could just turn. Guys, I'm sorry. You know I'm not making fun of the case. You know exactly what I'm making fun of.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
This Labor Day, say goodbye to spills, stains, and overpriced furniture with WashableSofas.com. Featuring Anabay, the only machine washable sofa inside and out, where designer quality meets budget-friendly pricing. Sofas start at just $6.99, making it the perfect time to upgrade your space. Anabay's pet-friendly, stain-resistant, and interchangeable slipcovers are made with high-performance fabric built for real life. You'll love the cloud-like comfort of hypoallergenic, high-resilience foam that never needs fluffing and a durable steel frame that stands the test of time. With modular pieces, you can rearrange anytime. It's a sofa that adapts to your life. Now through Labor Day, get up to 60% off site-wide at WashableSofas.com. Every order comes with a 30-day satisfaction guarantee. If you're not in love, send it back for a full refund. No return shipping, no restocking fees, every penny back. Shop now at WashableSofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
This Labor Day, say goodbye to spills, stains, and overpriced furniture with WashableSofas.com. Featuring Anabay, the only machine washable sofa inside and out, where designer quality meets budget-friendly pricing. Sofas start at just $6.99, making it the perfect time to upgrade your space. Anabay's pet-friendly, stain-resistant, and interchangeable slipcovers are made with high-performance fabric built for real life. You'll love the cloud-like comfort of hypoallergenic, high-resilience foam that never needs fluffing, and a durable steel frame that stands the test of time. With modular pieces, you can rearrange any time. It's a sofa that adapts to your life. Now through Labor Day, get up to 60% off site-wide at WashableSofas.com. Every order comes with a 30-day satisfaction guarantee. If you're not in love, send it back for a full refund. No return shipping, no restocking fees, every penny back. Shop now at WashableSofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
No, I'm looking forward to it. And yeah, I mean, I think, again, I think there are a lot of very empathetic people who are interested in the kind of work that you're doing and listening to this podcast. And so I'm sure I'm not the only one who, you know, in these kind of key moments in someone's life and in someone's future, imagine being in Jody's position, just sitting there as this is what's happening. And it's the sort of culmination of everything else that's happened in the trial and just feeling so out of control of everything. Yeah. and just how much despair you could feel at, you know, this is it. This is what he's leaving everyone with. This is my last chance. And yeah, that's what they got.
Yeah.
You know.
And I do want to answer Jeff's question in the chat. We want to know, were the DNA results confirmed after the trial?
Good question.
Yeah. So you will not be hearing in my closing argument that the DNA was a match to Andrew Wayne Bell, because we didn't know that at the time of trial. So
that's such a good question. I had forgotten about that. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I addressed the DNA, but it's things like that where I was, look, this is the first time I've ever read through a closing. Certainly there's times where I'm like, I might've played that a little differently, or I would have leaned into this, but I've never read where I'm like, you just shit the, like, this is terrible. This is the worst. This is the worst strategy ever, the way I see it anyway.
Yeah.
Enough to compel me to say, well, I want to just say how I would say it. But so, like, the DNA, I address it. I think I address it in a pretty good way, I think. I think I'm a fabulous lawyer.
Well, you're really teeing it up for next week.
But I'm excited about it. I'm excited about that just because it's something, I don't know, it's something very new. I've never done anything like this before. So,
are you going to start? We'll see. Is there going to be a gavel sound at the beginning or anything?
Well,
no.
Now that you mention it. As long as we're yapping, I guess there's one more housekeeping thing that I just want to mention.
Great.
It just made me think of it as we're kind of moving forward, you know, we're kind of approaching the end of the case and stuff, and thinking about where things are going in the future. One thing that is going to be happening is right around Christmas time. I hope you guys, it won't be on this feed. It's going to be on a different feed. I hope that you guys will all check out the first 3 episodes of my students' investigative podcast series.
Yes.
So I've got them right now. We've done the investigation part for these first 2 months. And now for the next 6 weeks, it's the journalism part where they're turning that into a story. So all 5 groups are assigned to create the first half of their 6 episode series.
Okay.
So they're all putting together so there's going to be, I don't know exactly what it's going to look like on the feed, because it's going to be one feed, but there'll be episodes 1, 2, and 3 of 5 different podcasts that are all put together 100% by students. So I'm so excited for you guys all to listen to them.
So excited about this. I can't wait.
And shout out to Audio Boom. They're hooking us up.
Nice.
And they're setting us up a feed to do it. So one thing the students are really excited about too is they're going to put ads into the episodes, like ad markers, and we've worked out with the finance guy at school. All the revenue generated from that podcast is going to go back into the broadcasting program for buying equipment and stuff like that. So like the kids are actually going to be earning money for the program. So I thought it was really, really cool.
I think that's so terrific. It's always great to hear about young people, you know, that you're in a position where you're helping young people think critically and, you know, ask those questions and look at the world through that lens. I think that's very encouraging. It makes me feel like good about the future, you know?
Me too. And I'm excited for people to hear their perspectives too.
Yeah.
Like, it's really cool. Yeah.
Absolutely.
And with that being said, that's probably enough yapping out of me.
So wait, one last thing. Do you know what that feed is going to be called? Please tell me it's going to be called Juice and Thustus.
I don't, actually.
Or Justice and Truth.
Emily from Audioboom asked me today. She's like, what do you want to name the feed? And I was like, we probably better figure that out.
Okay.
Because it's, you know, it is a government agency, so I have to, there's probably 25 people I have to approve it through.
I'm sure, that's true.
I'm sure it'll be something pretty basic to the school, I'm guessing. I don't know. I'll let you know. It'll be clever.
It'll be clever.
I got some clever kids.
Looking forward to it. Well, let's get into some questions and comments. First, I'm going to just share what Vivian posted. Vivian says, I just want to acknowledge that whenever I hear someone's story has changed, I think about the time I was pulled over for speeding, and when giving the officer information about my vehicle, I told him it was a 2005 when it was really a 2011. I didn't realize my mistake until later when looking at the ticket. So I have a bit of empathy for people who may remember things later or add to an original statement once they've had time to think about it. However, the changing stories in this case are on another level. So obvious. Please remind me if Mr. White is alive and willing to talk about the case. And thanks for all you do.
Mr. White is not alive anymore. That's what they said, but I was reading the chat while you were talking. That's what they asked, right? Was Mr. White alive?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, not alive anymore. Yeah, that's the thing is there people have, like, we've had discussions, you know, on the fan page and other social media where people have been, you know, we should be giving people a break. It was a long time went by and stuff. If you pay attention when I'm examining these statements and when I'm comparing, you know, new to statements to previous statements, there's never like this blanket, like, oh, you said something different. You're a liar. You expect some changes. Memories are malleable. There's all these different reasons. There's certain specific things that I'm looking for that tell, you know, for example, let's talk about all the Miles family saying that Mario was there with them and received this so-called threat from Shadis Wells. Okay, that's not a mistake. It's not like they added to something or there's a subtle change. We had very clear statements from them all. We have Glenda Miles saying, I was told to pass this message on to Mario. That is very clearly he is not there.
Yes.
That's not just something first she got. When she walked through the narrative of what happened, I was told by this person to pass this message on to Mario. And then when you have, you know, Andre Williams saying that I later told Mario about this information that I heard from this guy. You know, so when you have all these statements like that, and then they come out and say, yeah, Mario was sitting right there and the guy made the threat to Mario. That's
right.
When I don't have empathy for changing. That's not a mistake. It was a coordinated effort. They all changed their story in the same way. Or that's why I harped on with like Victoria Miles with like the plastic on the window.
Sure.
It wasn't like she just didn't mention it or she was asked and she said, I think so. She said that the reason she couldn't see clearly was because of the plastic on her windows. That tells me there absolutely was plastic on the windows 100%. Right then.
Yeah.
To then later come back and say, nah, there was never any plastic on the windows.
Yeah.
Like, that's not a mistake. That's not a malleable memory. That's a lie.
Yeah. Yeah, that one is, that really has stuck with me. I mean, of all the things about this case, that has successfully stuck with me as being the most confounding and frustrating, that it just sort of got to sit out there. It makes me a little bit crazy.
There's a bunch of, and that's some of the stuff where I'm just, where White as an attorney just drives me absolutely crazy as I read through this, you know, because we have the same case file he had.
Right.
And then
but we don't have, you know, we're not working on maybe 20 other cases or however many other he was burdened with. We don't, you know, in that sense, perhaps.
Right. But I don't give a shit.
Yeah,
like, when you're, this person's on trial for their life.
I know.
And for you not to be able to cross examine somebody because you'd missed the fact that Victoria Miles is going to come testify. I don't know. Maybe go read her statements first.
Of course. No, I know.
Anyway, we can move on.
Liz says, I agree with the idea that it's an exaggeration to say it's impossible for DeMario to have learned the name JoJo to utter with his dying breath. However, it made me wonder about a discussion from several weeks back about the injuries he sustained to his lungs. Would it have been possible to have an expert explain whether or not it would have been impossible for him to have said anything at all, much less JoJo by name?
We would have to have the autopsy, which I'm working on right now, because all we have is 20 pages of testimony, half of which is the CV from Dr. Tam. We, of course, don't have the actual autopsy in the case file, so I'm trying to get a hold of that right now.
But do you think that White had the autopsy, and do you think that White could have gone down that road?
I don't think so. It wasn't in the prosecutor's file.
Right.
And that's what he got for discovery. It wasn't in the murder book, wasn't in the prosecutor's file. So I don't think that it existed.
I mean, that's the kind of thing where I feel like, why does a case get to go forward? If you're missing crucial pieces of evidence, why doesn't...
Like a dispatch log?
Exactly. How does that even proceed? I guess it just
proceeds... Like an EMS report?
Yeah. While we're at it, yes, as a matter of fact.
What do all those things have in common?
They're official.
They would all have the time that was dispatched to the scene. And they're all missing. But as far as, if we were able to get a hold of the autopsy, we should be able to have an expert look at it. But you can even in Sonia Lucas's trial story, if you read it, she says that she first said she asked Mario if he was okay. And he was trying to say yeah. But he couldn't because he couldn't breathe. And then after that, she said, who did it? And he said, JoJo. So, I mean, there's obviously
that makes the story even more strange, honest, in my opinion.
It doesn't make sense. Almost like it didn't happen, right? Which is exactly what she said. It didn't happen. But yeah, if you can't speak 1 second, but you can speak later, it's only getting worse. There's so much to that. We can talk about how long has been gone by since Mario was shot, how much blood was in the lungs at that point. But just look at the body position. He's found with his legs still on the stairs and his arms hanging out the door. That tells me he was unable to move and was unconscious or dead at that point. When he hit the ground, when he hit the floor, he was done. So the idea of him picking his head up somehow and talking to Sonia, but not moving or trying to crawl somewhere, or you get his legs off the stairs, or I don't know, instead of saying JoJo, saying call 911, none of it makes any sense. None of it makes any sense. And then, listen, I've been thinking a lot about this because I'm doing this closing argument, right? So I got to think of how do I approach this piece of evidence without knowing that she's recanted? Well, think about the rest of the story. She hears the shots. She opens the door. She sees her friend bleeding to death and says, are you okay? And he says, yeah, which what?
I know.
And then she says, who did it? And he says, JoJo. And she said, cool. And closed the door and didn't call 911, didn't talk to anybody, never came outside, didn't try to help him. And then after taking that huge risk of popping her head out, right after gunshots are being fired right out there with her six kids inside, she's got the stones to do that, to find out who did it. But then she's too scared to tell the police what he said.
Yeah.
There's a whole lot of reasons not to believe
that. That's quite a ride. Yeah. It's quite a ride that you go on when you walk through everything just like that. And that just going back quickly to when I said earlier that I was almost surprised that White had a strategy at all. I guess that's what I'm sort of trying to say. Because, you hear, I believe early on, he is talking about, look, we heard a lot about how these people were very reluctant to come forward. And, you have to ask yourself, did they eventually just, he even brings up, I can't remember who it is, but someone who's saying maybe they just told the police what they wanted to hear. I think that's the point at which I thought, oh, okay.
Well, that was Sonia.
We've said that. Yeah. So it was Sonia. We've certainly said that. And so that's, I think, where I had that flicker of hope. But then it ended up being couched in this way that I also could just imagine sitting in my chair as the prosecutor being oh, well, I could just get up and say people were afraid for their lives because they were afraid of what could happen if they came forward. So I don't really have to worry too much. You know what I mean? So many things that he said that you he may have thought to himself, like, aha, this really cuts in my direction. It's like, no, this is right down the middle, if not leaning harder towards being able to rebut it and make it work better for the state, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And he did, you know, he did a pretty good job of going after Sonia, but it was the other elements where he shit the bed on it.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Target, Nike, and Instacart. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. It's easy to use, and you can get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's Rakuten, Rakuten.com.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
This Labor Day, say goodbye to spills, stains, and overpriced furniture with WashableSofas.com. Featuring Anabay, the only machine washable sofa inside and out, where designer quality meets budget-friendly pricing. Sofas start at just $6.99, making it the perfect time to upgrade your space. Anabay's pet-friendly, stain-resistant, and interchangeable slip covers are made with high-performance fabric built for real life. You'll love the cloud-like comfort of hypoallergenic, high-resilience foam that never needs fluffing, and a durable steel frame that stands the test of time. With modular pieces, you can rearrange anytime. It's a sofa that adapts to your life. Now through Labor Day, get up to 60% off site-wide at WashableSofas.com. Every order comes with a 30-day satisfaction guarantee. If you're not in love, send it back for a full refund. No return shipping, no restocking fees, every penny back. Shop now at WashableSofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Okay, let's move on to Courtney, who says, before launching the case, did you anticipate that the timesheet's validity would be such a big point of contention?
No, and it's only a point of contention with internet people. And I don't mean that disparagingly, but like there are other people that are going to be what makes a difference in the case as far as whether Jody is freed or not. And nobody has ever questioned the validity of it. So, no, was I surprised that people that think Jody's guilty are trying to attack the validity of it? No, I didn't. But no, I didn't think that any. It seemed pretty cut and dry. It seems pretty cut and dry for everybody that. And please don't take offense to this on either side. But for the people that matter, no one's questioning the validity of it at all.
When you're saying, you're not saying for the people that matter, like the listeners that matter. You're saying for the people that matter who can make a difference in the future of this case and this person's life.
Yes.
I understand.
That's what I mean.
Thanks
by
for
that.
Clarifying. Yeah.
It is surprising to me because the big thing I kept hearing was, well, wait till we hear the testimonies from the coworkers and this and that, and then we'll see. And I genuinely hoped that some of those people would be objective in the fact that, okay, now you've heard it. Princella testified the same thing she told the police. I know it was 11 o'clock when I was there, and I know there was still a bunch of work to be done. I could see all the dishes to be done. And then both Cornelius and LaShawn saying we left around midnight. And then you have this timesheet that's clocked out at 12:05. Like, what are we doing here at this point? It'd be one thing if they were like, yeah, I think we left at 9 and maybe it was like 10 or 11 when we left. And then you had a timesheet that said midnight. That's worth questioning. But when they're both saying it was around midnight and then the timesheet shows it was midnight. Like, I'm sorry, I can't waste too much more breath arguing about that at that point.
Can you just remind me really quickly, because I know that when we were talking about this one episode, you had mentioned, like, if you believe that Jody did this, there is a way to believe that and take the timesheet to be fact. But it can't also be that the timing of the murder happened so much later than all of this evidence to the contrary, or the missing evidence to the contrary would seem to provide either. So it's, we're just talking about a small window of time, right? So if you believe that the murder happened when, for all intents and purposes, like it really seems like it did, and not the time that, you know, certain people are saying it did, certain police officers rather, but like, so in other words, can you just refresh us on that? Because you did say, like, I respect the opinion of someone who feels that the timesheets are fine and accurate and they're not doctored, but also still believes that Jody's guilty.
Yeah. So it was a listener. I think it was Chris. I can't remember his last name, but Chris was a listener who I just thought it was an intellectually honest argument, one that I disagree with, but it comes from a place of logic and not a place of like starting with a conclusion and working backwards.
Mm-hmm.
And basically what he said was, I don't see how we can argue the timesheet. I don't want to put words in his mouth, but essentially he's not arguing that the timesheet's not accurate. He's saying that, yeah, Jody probably left work at 12:05, but I still think Jody committed the murder because I think the murder happened at 12:40. And I think and because he doesn't believe necessarily Sherelle's version, because there's conflicts with Sherelle, with Nadia Butler and all that stuff there, you know, so he's making the argument that if the murder happened at 12:40, then yeah, like Jody could have got home. Maybe when Cornelia said they talked for 20 minutes, what if it was 15? And then what if Jody didn't go inside, but then just went straight to their car? And then drove out there and found him. Like, it's still really tight, but that timeline could work. Like, to me, that's an intellectually honest position to have. You know, it's not like, because what it feels like to me is, well, I believe Jody's guilty, and therefore I can't believe that Jody left at 12:05, and therefore I don't believe Sean, I don't believe Cornelius, I don't believe Princella, I don't believe the timesheet, I don't believe any of that stuff, because all of that stuff makes my theory blow up. So I can't believe any of that.
Right.
As opposed to, I think it's still possible. And then I would hope that if we're able to find proof that the murder happened before midnight, that people like Chris would look at that and say, well, my position has been Jody didn't leave work for midnight, till midnight. So now I see that the murder happened at 11:45. That means Jody's innocent. Simple as that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would hope that would be the case if we were able to find that.
Gotcha. Boy, I hope we can find that stuff. I really, really hope we can find that stuff. Jeff, let's just read Jeff's comment really quickly. We don't have a ton of questions left in the follow-up, so I'll just read this. But Jeff says, not to beat a dead horse, but I'm so hung up on Nadia's testimony. It would be real easy for her to lie and back her friend and Jody's story, but she basically craps all over their narrative. Can't seem to get past how or why that happens.
Yeah, and I don't know what to do with Nadia's testimony either. I mean, Jody and Sherelle's testimony seem to line up just fine. Nadia's version of, you know, whether it's her memory or she's telling the truth and Sherelle's lying, I don't know. So if that's what the alibi hung on, if the alibi hung on whether or not Jody went inside, had an argument with Sherelle, got naked, lay down in bed, and then she left, then for me there would be at least some question there. I mean, reading, of course, we didn't hear it, but I can read her exact words when she's on the stand. And she seems very, there's a lot of veracity there when she says, when she's very stubbornly says that her mother and children, her handicap, remember she's saying, my mother and kids were there all night. Jody never left. And they're like, well, you never told them that. I'm like, I did tell them that. I told them that she was there. And they're like, well, we don't know if she was really there. She's like, she's handicapped and she can't leave. She was there. You know, that read to me is having a lot of veracity behind it. But I would have to look at the conflicts in the timing of how everything worked out when Nadia testified. It does seem like at the, that when you read Nadia's original police report or her second police interview, that she was conflating and confusing the day of the robbery and the day of the murder, because they were really questioning her about the robbery at first. And then she lays out this timeline and they clarify they're talking about the murder. So there was some confusion there between the two nights. Mm. But the thing for me is, as far as I'm concerned, as far as the evidence that we have, even if the murder was at 12, even if the 911, it was never that the murder was 1240, it was that the 911 call was at 1240. Even if the 911 call was at 1240, I think Cornelius is enough. I think Jody's alibi ends with Cornelius, because if they clock out at 1205, we've been through this a million times, but clock out 1205, take a 7-minute drive back to the house. They talk for 20 minutes and then they get out. Now, Jody doesn't have enough time then to, first of all, Jody doesn't know where Mario is. And even if they drove straight there to 784 Broadway, and again, like I said a couple weeks ago, if you believe Jody did it, the only reason you can believe that is because of Victoria Miles' testimony. So you got to take her version of events that the car drives around back, gets up, walks up, talks for 5 minutes. They have a pleasant conversation that turns into an argument, and then the gunshots fire. There's just not enough time for me. Like it doesn't matter what happened after Cornelius left, based on the timeline, the way I see it, that it doesn't really, that really doesn't matter if we believe Sherelle or don't believe Sherelle. And also, it kind of speaks to the fact that Jody genuinely didn't know when the murder happened. Jody didn't know. People lie about stuff and alibis. Even I'm not saying it is a lie, but if it was, but alibis and stuff like that all the time, who are innocent because they see what's happening and they're like, I'm trying to account for as much time as I can. And so I'm trying to give myself more time because, you know, as Jody said at trial, he thought the murder happened in the middle of the night. They didn't know that the murder happened at, you know, in my opinion, probably closer to 11:45, 11:50.
Right. Susan says, do we know when Nadia first told her version of the night? Was it right away? Was it
right
days?
Away. It was the next day. It was the very next day. So it was right away. It was the very next day. She was, but you know, it's on the website. But if you read through those interviews, you see that there is some confusion. Like they're really talking a lot about the robbery, and there's a lot of, like her alibi that they were talking about with her originally was Jody's alibi for the night of the robbery.
Hmm.
And then they slide into the murder, and there's some confusion there. But yeah, her version was right away. Her and Sherelle both talked to the police on that next day, on that Friday.
God, that's so interesting. And we don't know anything about Nadia to know like whether she would like think she was helping Jody or want to implicate Jody for some personal reason of her own. Like, we just don't know anything about any of that.
No, we don't. And I mean, I think a theory is, again, we don't have her recorded statement or a transcript. We have just the police report. So, you know, I think there's a version of this theory where, there is a theory where she gives this interview and the officer that interviewed her documented it in a certain way. And then a year goes by and trial comes up and the state pulls her in to prep for trial. And they show her, you know, again, just a theory, but it's possible she doesn't really remember all the details. So they give her this report to look at to refresh her memory. And then she reads that and thinks that that must be what happened. And that's what she just regurgitates. Because her testimony is lock and step with that police report.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, I don't know what to do with it either. Okay. Just kind of refreshing on what we were talking about earlier. Jeff Corey has a really interesting point, just kind of draws a circle around this idea, as you say, in the episode of White making it so much about the robbery versus the murder. Jeff Corey points out this isn't just the state's motive. Jody literally mentions in their testimony that whoever did the robbery did the murder. This was a time when they were denying their part in it, obviously. So you've heard your own client make a statement tying those two things together, and then you still make your closing argument about how there you can't tie those things together. That seems dangerous.
It is dangerous, but like your client saying that is not a police officer. It's not, you know, like you can't take that as gospel that, oh, well, because that would be like saying, well, if Jody said whoever committed the robbery didn't commit the murder, that must be true.
No, I agree with that. I don't think that's what Jeff Corey is saying. I don't think anyone's saying like, look, this means that Jody did do them both or anything like that. I'm just saying if you are that person's defense attorney and the prosecution gets to rebut and they can stand up and say, oh, I'm sorry, but I'm not the only one who says whoever did the, you know what I'm saying? Like,
right.
Didn't Joe say yada, yada, yada? Like, there's just that one more thing that you could just put the nail in the coffin, like, oh, thanks for bringing that up. That actually gives me the opportunity to remind you that your own client said that whoever did the robbery did the murder. And we've proven that they did the robbery. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It certainly complicates things.
Like, I just would, if you're doing your job as a defense attorney, maybe you take that into account and you don't hang everything on this strategy that you have that is going to blow up in your face over and over.
So I think a simple strategy would have been to hammer on the fact that what really matters here is what is the evidence that Jody committed this murder, period. And I think I would push on to the fact, I would really lean into the fact that the prosecution has like backed into, and even a lot of our listeners have backed into the idea that the robbery was the motive for the murder. But it's backed into because it was established, the police decided that night, according to Andre Williams and Sherelle that was on the scene and Nadia, everybody at the scene that night was saying Jody did it. So they started with the conclusion that Jody did it, and then it became, why did Jody do it? Must be because of the robbery. So the investigation went backwards to get that way. And so now we're like stuck with this like foregone conclusion that, well, the robbery has to be the motive for the murder. But the only reason that anybody thinks the robbery is the motive for the murder is because they already thought Jody did it and they thought Jody did the robbery. Instead of backing up like we did when we really looked at victimology, like what do we know? We know that Mario was a friendly guy that liked people, that was riding around and hanging out with Canvas and hanging out with people all night. We know that Mario dealt drugs, and we know that Mario dropped Canvas off and told her that he had something to do. That's what she said. He dropped her off and said, I'll be back. I have something I have to go do. And then he went and just parked in this empty lot by himself this whole time.
Objection.
Like, yes.
Are you giving away too much of next week's episode?
No.
Overruled.
Maybe. Possibly. No, but you know, like, I know that, and the reason is because, like I said, I don't think the closing argument should be focused on the robbery at all. It should be focused on the fact that what is the evidence of the murder? The jury's job is to determine, was there evidence Jody committed the murder? Jody could be an axe murderer, serial killer. It doesn't mean that you have evidence that Jody committed this murder, and that's what Jody is on trial for, is this murder. So I think that was the big mistake in the strategy. All this stuff about what Jody said and all the connections between the robbery and the murder. I think the only thing that should have been addressed there is Jody's not on trial for robbery.
Right.
Jody's on trial for murder. And let's look at the evidence for the murder, and there is none.
Right. Well, yeah. I mean, it's an interesting question to ask, because if White felt like, you could either say that White was sort of sucked into the narrative that the state was presenting, and then he just kind of kept feeding back into it in a way that was very bad for Jody. Or perhaps he, in his mind, was like, well, even though this isn't really about the robbery, obviously I have to talk a lot about the robbery because we've been talking a lot about the robbery. So I got to keep that going. You know what I mean? Like,
I think that White was so unprepared and outlawed. I think that Cotter convinced him that the robbery was connected.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, because he didn't know, he clearly didn't know the case file.
Yeah.
I mean, Jesus Christ, he went in, they're playing the dispatch tape and he never bothered, and he had that in discovery And he didn't bother to listen to it before the trial.
Right.
He stops and goes, I don't know what else is on this tape.
Yeah.
We can't keep playing this. I don't know what else I'm going to hear.
Yeah.
Like, so I think he was so unprepared. He didn't fully understand the case. I think he probably thought maybe this would be a plea deal like most of the other cases are. And then he looked at, Cotter was a hell of a lawyer. He lawyered the shit out of this case.
Yeah.
From start to finish.
Yeah.
And I think that White literally went into the closing arguments thinking, it's like, well, obviously that the robbery and the murder are connected because this fellow over here just told me it was 100 times throughout this trial.
Right. Yeah. Well, it worked. Good job, Cotter, I guess. That's all I have. That's all we have.
Okay. Thanks for- well, on Sunday, you get to hear how I would have responded to Art Cotter's closing argument. And instead of just me talking about what I should have, could have, would have done, I'm going to do it and see if I convince any of you that Jody Hill is actually innocent. So make sure you tune in on Sunday for that. And we'll talk to you guys again next week.
Objection. Attorney is giving testimony. I'm just trying
Overruled.
To step out. Thanks, everybody. Bye, guys. Bye.
Truth and Justice is an NBI Studios production, co-written and produced by Erica Bergenham. Music for Season 15 is created and composed by Caden Ladislaw. Follow-up episodes are co-hosted by Janet Varney and Zach Weaver. Our logo font was created by Tate Krupa of Red Swan Graphic Design. Our website is created, managed, and maintained by Katie Ross of createdintandem.com. Thank you to our volunteer transcription team, Erica Cantor, Kathy McElhaney, Courtney Wimberly, Kaywood Yomnick, Danielle Rohr, Jennifer Athey, and Caroline Dwyer. Truth and Justice provides all investigative and advocacy work for the wrongfully convicted completely free of charge. We're able to do that in large part thanks to you, our listeners, through your generous pledges on Patreon. Patreon accounts for the overwhelming majority of our funding. The number one way you can support our work is to become a patron at patreon.com/truthandjustice. For just $5 a month, you'll get all episodes ad-free, a bonus pregame episode every Wednesday, and also a video version of the Friday follow-ups exclusive to our patrons. Patrons also get to participate and join the chat live in many of our interviews and get early access to much of our content. Just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice to sign up. You can also help us out by going to iTunes and leaving us a 5-star rating and review. It doesn't cost you a penny and goes a long way towards making the show more visible. If you have a new case that you'd like us to consider, you can submit your cases on our website, truthandjusticepod.com. Just click on the case submission button and fill out the form. You can always keep in touch with us through our email at theories@truthandjusticepod.com. You can like our Facebook page or join in on the conversation on the official Truth and Justice Podcast fans page. You can also connect with us on social media platform X @truthjusticepod. And to follow our personal accounts on social media, I can be found at Bob Ruff Truth. Janet can be found at Janet Varney, and Zach is at Z to the Q. However you do it, stay engaged and stay in touch. But as for now, we're signing off. I'm Bob Ruff.
I'm Zach Weaver.
And I'm Janet Varney.
And this has been Truth and Justice.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
This Labor Day, say goodbye to spills, stains, and overpriced furniture with WashableSofas.com. Featuring Anabay, the only machine washable sofa inside and out, where designer quality meets budget-friendly pricing. Sofas start at just $6.99, making it the perfect time to upgrade your space. Anabay's pet-friendly, stain-resistant, and interchangeable slipcovers are made with high-performance fabric built for real life. You'll love the cloud-like comfort of hypoallergenic, high-resilience foam that never needs fluffing, and a durable steel frame that stands the test of time.
With modular pieces, you can rearrange any time. It's a sofa that adapts to your life. Now through Labor Day, get up to 60% off site-wide at washablesofas.com. Every order comes with a 30-day satisfaction guarantee. If you're not in love, send it back for a full refund. No return shipping, no restocking fees, every penny back. Shop now at washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.